Hello, and welcome to the WWIA podcast. We're honored to have you join us in our mission to bring honor, connection, and healing to America's combat wounded Purple Heart heroes. If this is your first time listening to this podcast, we welcome you. If you're a returning listener, thanks for coming back. Please be sure to tell others about our podcast and leave us a review if you're enjoying what you're hearing. On this week's episode, WWIA founder and CEO John McDaniel is proud to welcome a great American patriot and one of his closest lifelong friends to the podcast. We're honored to have Colonel Retired Joel T. Sunkel join John for an engaging and timely conversation. Joel hails from Oshkosh, Wisconsin, and graduated from the University of Wisconsin-Oshkosh as a distinguished military graduate in 1988. He was commissioned as a second lieutenant in the Armor Branch and went on to graduate from the Command and General Staff College and the Army War College Fellowship Program. Joel holds a Master of Arts degree in Organizational Behavior from the University of Phoenix, and during his 28-plus year career in the Army, held a number of key positions to include Strategic Plans Chief for Stabilization Force 11, Bosnia-Herzegovina, Operation Joint Forge, Joint Logistics Command Operations Officer, Combined Joint Task Force 76, Afghanistan, Commander, 83rd Ordnance Battalion, Japan, and Chief of Logistics, 25th Infantry Division, and Multinational Division North, Iraq. Upon retirement from the Army, Joel accepted the position of Chief of Operations with the Logistics Data Analysis Center, Army Materiel Command, Redstone Arsenal, Alabama. In 2020, Joel purchased 75 acres of land in Moulton, Alabama, and embarked on a journey to establish a working cattle ranch, driven by a need to build something lasting with his own two hands. His vision didn't stop at personal fulfillment. He began to realize the profound therapeutic benefits of working the land, the grounding power of physical labor, and the sense of purpose that came from providing for oneself. It struck him that this experience could be incredibly valuable for others, especially those who had served our country and were navigating the challenges of transitioning back to civilian life. This realization led to Joel's most meaningful venture, the establishment of Rally Point Veterans Ranch, a nonprofit organization dedicated to empowering veterans through comprehensive, sustainable living skills training. It's a high privilege to have Joel on the podcast, and we know you're going to enjoy learning more about him and his story. Let's jump right into the conversation with John and Joel now.
Hi, I'm John McDaniel, founder and CEO of the Wounded Warriors in Action Foundation, and this is our podcast, Honor, Connect, Heal. So, geez, it's early part of July 2026, so I don't know when this is going to air, but I have with me today, like, my best buddy, okay, guy that I grew up with. We first met in middle school?
I think seventh grade.
Seventh grade, Webster Stanley, Webster Stanley, Oshkosh, Wisconsin. So with me today is Joel Sunkel. His military career, I think, was more illustrious than mine. He went on to serve for 28 years?
28 and some change.
Yeah. 28 and some change, and made it to the rank of full colonel. But here's the best part of this. You and I went to basic training together. We were privates together on Tank Hill in Fort Jackson, South Carolina, in the same platoon, basic training, right?
Same platoon, and we were both squad leaders.
Squid leaders together.
Sure were.
What a great story that is. So our platoon, our drill sergeant was a guy named Sergeant Lyle, and he was an old infantryman. He was a stray-leg infantryman. He was hard like Russian roll call, but you know, wow. I mean, that was 1983.
Yep. 1983.
It's crazy. We share stories about that all the time, you know? Yeah. And then we went on and became officers and, you know, served our country. I did for 20, Joel did for 28. You're a professional logistician. Right, but you started out as a tanker.
Started out as a tanker I got commissioned, and my first duty assignment was in Korea. And I was a tanker through that tour, which was about 2 years. And then, funny enough, talking about going to basic training, when I PCS from Korea, I went back to Fort Jackson, back to basic training.
As a company commander
as a captain? As a company XO, as a training officer.
Right back to where we started.
Yeah.
What was your impression when you got there? You like, holy crap, I'm
so
back?
So they don't keep soldiers on Tank Hill anymore. They keep them in these new, you know, high speed.
So when we were there, it was World War II barracks.
Yeah. And they're still, they were at that time. Yeah. But they weren't being, they were utilized when reservists came in for 2 weeks at a time. But as far as, soldiers rotating through basic training, they had no facilities at that time. But, anyway, back to Tanker and Otis Tishman. So it was during that tour as a company XO that I did a branch transfer to logistics. Well, back in those days, logistics had different branches within it. Now it's just logistics. Mm. So I went to be an ammunition officer.
Okay.
So I was an ammunition officer until...
beans and bullets, man.
Well, okay. So within the ordnance corps, there was ammunition and there was maintenance. I went the ammunition route. And then I can't remember what year it was.
I didn't know that.
And then at some point, whenever they combined, quartermaster ordnance transportation into the logistics corps, that's when I switched.
But you met your lifelong bride, young Sue, when you were in Korea. Right?
I did, yeah.
Got married, have two boys who are now in their mid...
No, one's 32, one's 34.
Okay,
early 30s.
And Jacob's the youngest, and
he's currently on active duty.
Yeah, as a engineer?
He's an engineer, combat engineer.
Yeah, very, very fine officer, from what I understand. Very good, very good. Well, yeah. So we just got off the water, by the way. So we're in Apollo Beach. We're in my house. We're recording this here. It's a hot July day. We got out on the water about 9 o'clock this morning. Bait was everywhere, but it was hard to catch. And so we went out to this, I guess it's a tower. They call it a tower. It's near Apollo Beach. It's a big navigational tower, and it usually holds bait. So we got some bait there, but ended up seeing big fish on the marking big fish on the sonar. So I put one of these big old slab threadfin herrings that we caught in the cast net on a jig head and ran it down, and we were just drifting, and all of a sudden I picked up the rod and it's doubling over, and I was like surprised. Very surprised that we had something that large. But Joel, you chime in here, man. And we fought that fish. We fought it for an hour, and had to trade off multiple times.
Yeah.
Right?
At least five times.
Yeah. It was on for an hour, and I was as we were battling this beast, and this is all on light tackle, 20-pound test. Okay, I had 20-pound braid, 20-pound fluorocarbon tippet material on there. And, a custom rod from Chippewa Custom Rods. Thanks, Tommy. That rod did amazing, by the way. And a pen slammer on there, an open face pen slammer. And we fought that fish for an hour. And I was like, I don't know what this is. And about halfway through the battle, this giant tarpon, probably 150-pound tarpon, I'm not kidding, porpoises, comes clean out of the water 5 feet from the boat, right? And we looked at each other, and I thought it was the fish maybe, but it had come up and bellied the line and porpoised right in front of the boat, jumped right in front of the boat, but it wasn't. And so, long story short, we finally get this thing up after an hour off the bottom. And I said, I think, you know, it might be a, you know, one of those sawfish. It might be.
After you put an arrow through its back.
Yeah, I did. I had to. I was going to leave that part out, but now that it's being, but hey, it was so big. I reckon it was between 70 and 90 pounds. Okay. There was no way we were going to get that thing aboard without some assistance. So I did bring my bow with me. And so it's an unregulated species. And so the only way we got it in was that way. But anyway, what a giant, beautiful fish. So we had a good time. Now we came back and we're doing this podcast. But here's what I want to talk about. I got Joel, you know, with me here, obviously at my house. And you know, he served our country, did an amazing job, and now he's a cat. You're still a contractor. I want to talk a little bit about that maybe too. But you bought some land a few years ago, and you told me you were going to do this. I said, what are you doing with that land? You're like, I'm going to start raising cattle. I'm going to be a cattle rancher. I'm like, what the hell do you know about cattle ranching? You go, nothing. I don't know anything. But I'm going to learn. And you dang sure did, didn't you? Tell us about that, man.
So, yeah, it was about, it's probably been 4 years ago. 4 years ago, I bought the land. Now, it took me a year to prepare the land to be able to receive cattle on it because I had to put watering systems in there.
How'd you learn about that?
Well, number one, my son, my oldest son, Joshua, works for the USDA up in Wisconsin, specifically in the NRCS, which is the Natural Resource Conservation something. And he knows of all these programs that the NRCS will support local farmers with. And he told me, you know, hey, you need to get with your local NRCS. They can help you get your land set up to receive cattle. So I went down there, and I happened to have just this outstanding NRCS office that works in Moulton, Alabama.
You're in Alabama.
I'm in Alabama. I live in Madison. The farm is in Moulton, which is 45 minutes drive from my house.
I've been there.
You have?
It's nice property.
And so I went down to the NRCS office and he said, yeah, we do cost shares on these programs. And here's the things you're going to need to get cattle on there. Number one, you need to water them because they discourage ponds, right? A lot of
stagnant water, yep.
But they discourage that because it's just not good for the environment.
Yep.
And it's not good for the cattle.
No. Nope.
They're pissing and shitting in it all day long and then drinking it. So
yeah.
We put in these water wells. So that's all.
Defecating and urinating.
Yeah. Is that what I said?
Yeah.
I don't know what defecating means.
That's hilarious, man.
But yeah, they told me how to put in that.
So you got
to
put a well in, or is this?
No, I'm off a meter, off a county meter.
Okay.
I put it in.
You pipe in city water, but it's on demand when they need it, or what?
It's on demand. It's kind of like a, you know, it's got a float in it that automatically feeds when.
So why are you doing this? Why did you do that?
Why did I do that?
I know you got an idea. We'll talk about your idea in a little bit.
Yeah,
why did you do that? Yeah. Why did you do that?
Well, again, I mean, because I've always, as you know, we love the outdoors.
Yes.
And we love just being outside.
Yeah, that's right.
And you also remember, well, when John and I were young, in, say high school.
Oh, yeah. You're going to talk
We used to go hunting at my uncle's farm.
Uncle Norby.
And Norbert always had cattle, if you remember.
He did.
He had Herefords.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kind of, you know, at the time, was I interested about the cattle? No. But
right.
I guess as time passes, it just...
Do you remember that time that he put us in the back of the... It was a combine or something. I don't know what it was. He was harvesting corn.
Yeah.
Remember that? And the corn was flying back into this bin that we were in and getting waylaid by this corn.
It was a corn bin. Yeah.
We were shooting arrows at his hay bales. I mean, we had so much fun. He had 40 acres, and we would go up there, and we would hunt. And
no, just, he had hundreds of acres. We hunted 40 acres.
Oh, was that was his 40? Or no, that was your parents' 40, wasn't it?
Well, you're in the future, but back when we were in high school,
yeah,
he owned that 40, and he owned probably 300 acres surrounding.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so he used to be a crop farmer and...
You know, I went to go find that place when I go by it. I go by Westfield every time I go to camp, you know, and I've taken the off road to try to find his old farmhouse. And I think I'm always thinking I know that's it, but I'm not sure. Well, someday we should go there
I drive.
Is it still there?
When I go to see my son up in Wisconsin,
yeah,
I drive by it.
Is it still there?
It's still there.
Ah, I see.
The farmhouse is still there.
Yeah. And that restaurant that we used to go to, it's still
the Pioneer.
The Pioneer.
And the Pioneer dude's still standing up.
It is. So you had this idea, you know, but you like to be outside, but cattle, I mean, you could have... I mean, you're growing mushrooms over here. You know, you got all kinds of stuff going on there, man. But what are you doing with the cattle?
Okay, the cattle. So I knew I wanted to do cattle because I had, you know, to be honest with you, I thought, you can ask my wife. I talked about when I retire, I want to raise cattle. I don't know why.
You said that for a long time.
I said it for a long time.
You like steak.
I like steak, so I guess I want to raise cattle. So
that's funny.
So I got out, I retired, I bought that land, you know, not as quick as I just said that,
but right.
I mean, it took a little time.
Yeah.
So then I had to decide, do I want to go into a cow-calf operation or a feeder cattle operation? And a cow-calf.
What's the difference?
Well, a cow-calf operation is where you have your base set of cows.
Yeah.
Female.
And they're just producing calves.
And they produce calves, and you either, one, grow those calves to butcher them when they get big enough.
About 350 or 400, 500, I don't
know. No, I try to get them between 1,000 and 1,200.
Oh, you got them that big.
1,000 to 1,200 pounds before they go to the butcher.
Okay, but a lot of guys are buying them at 250, 300, and then sell them at 1,000,
and they're
right?
Probably going to feeder lots.
Yeah.
Where they put them on feed and grow them to 1,200 pounds and then take them to the butcher.
Right.
And that's the other half that I was going to tell you. So I'm the cow-calf guy.
Yeah.
And there's people that just, you know, they rotate cattle through. They buy the 300-400 pound calves. They'll grow them to 1,200. Mm-hmm. They'll take them to the slaughter.
So you and your land... It's got deer on it and turkey. I mean, it's prime Alabama country for deer and wild game and whatnot.
I mean, you don't see the deer there that you see in northern Wisconsin up at Camp Hackett, but you see deer as you can.
Oh yeah.
You know.
You let me and Dylan, my oldest son, shot his first deer on your property, and I'm completely honored by them. It was a very, one of the greatest experiences of my life, certainly as a dad. And to do that on your property, I mean, that was very cool. And I really appreciate it. And Dylan certainly talks about that all the time. But anyhow, so you have this idea that you've shared with me that we've been chatting about over the last, I don't know, some time, but certainly this weekend we spent a lot of time talking about it, where you want to give back, and you we know that veterans in general are, can struggle. Some of them do struggle a lot with this transition from the service, whether they were in for 3 years or 30 years. It's an identity issue. A lot of them don't know, who they should be once they get out. What should I do? Especially after, a combat experience, I think it's that idea is certainly more, it's intensified who am I? What do I want to do? Who should I be? You know, all these really, you know, very basic questions, but you have this idea that you want to help them transition. You want to talk about that a little bit? I think it's great. You're considering starting a charity, right? You have your Rally Point Ranch. That's what you call it, right?
Right.
Rally Point.
Yeah.
So tell us about that, Joel.
So to be honest with you, how I got the idea was from you. You know, you have mentioned that to me I've followed your foundation for years, of course, and you've been doing this for years, but you said to me, I don't know if it was 2, 3, 4 years ago,
mm-hmm.
you know, you should think about, I don't know if it was your idea, but you had the idea that you could do some type of charity with this ranch. And I always nodded my head and say, yeah, you're right. And then I never did anything with it because, to be honest with you, so right now I'm still working full time, you know, for the Army, not as a soldier, but as a civilian, and also trying to maintain that ranch.
It's a lot of work.
I didn't have the bandwidth to put the effort into it.
Yeah.
But now my son, who is in the Army, decided that he wants to take a different route in life. And so he's going to be transitioning. And he, you know, him and I were talking. And I said, did you ever think about doing something with a ranch? And he says, yeah, that's exactly what I want to do, but I didn't want to ask you and impose on you.
What a wonderful son. Yeah.
And I said, well, no, I'd love it. So he's going to be going through the transition too, right? All he's done his adult life has been in the Army.
Mm-hmm. So he's a leader.
He
commanded as a company commander, as an engineer.
He said two commands.
Two commands.
Engineer command and then, the HHC, which.
Oh. They don't give that to, that's a second command.
Right.
They give that to the best guys. Yeah. They get that. Yeah, that's good. That's good.
So he said, yeah, we do. So we decided, you know, what is it that we want to do? And actually, this was his idea. He goes, I want to help soldiers who are getting out of the Army that don't know what to do with their lives and help them in transition. And, not everyone's going to get out of the Army and become ranchers, you know, cattle farmers.
Mm-hmm.
It's not easy, to be honest with you.
Yeah, you got to have some capital to get some land, and cows aren't free.
But there are. Quite a few people who would be interested because there's nothing more calming than working out there with cattle.
Yeah,
you're just out there with your cattle.
That's right.
I mean, there's a sense of calmness about it.
Yeah,
and satisfaction.
Right.
When you're you know, you're taking care of your cows, you're watching calves be burnt, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, that's...
I said, hey, what? So why not? Why not bring in veterans and kind of, you know, our focus would be primarily, you know, showing them how to ranch cattle, to be honest with you.
Well, I gotta tell you, I was thinking about that, man, and I was thinking, Alabama, first off, I love Alabama. Alabama is just a great, there are great people in Alabama. And we've got a mission in Alabama now, and I've got a lot of good friends, Matt Brandon and his crew. You know, you did meet him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're just tremendous folk. And I would imagine that when people start hearing, or when people hear that, you know, that there's a charity out there that's going to help, you know, veterans in their transition, and you're going to do that, you know, the stepping stone for that is, you know, teaching them or you know, making them aware of this idea of ranching the land. Because it doesn't just have to be cattle, but that's what you do. And you've got so many people that'll, I think, eventually get behind you to help veterans. There's a lot of people actually already kind of doing that. You know, this agricultural piece, transition with veterans. We have, I know my phone's going to start ringing off the hook as soon as we, you know, launch this podcast. But we have people in our network, I think, that are going to want to help you. And I think you're going to end up with a lot of help, and I think that's great. And you can obviously, you know, one of the hooks there can be, you know, you can fish and hunt with them on your land, mostly probably hunt because I don't think you have a pond. But, you know, this idea of getting veterans together, this connecting them with each other and giving them a pathway, you know, teach a man to, you know, the old proverb, teach a man to fish. And give a man a fish, he eats for a day. Teach him to fish, he eats for a lifetime. And that's kind of the basic idea. But I don't think you're going to be short at all on people wanting to help you and veterans interested in getting into your program. I don't think that I think it's going to be wildly successful, especially with somebody like you and your son running it.
I would hope so. And as you know, of course, I couldn't just. I mean, we do more than just, you know, ranch cattle, too. I mean, if you ask a cattle farmer, you know, what kind of farmer is it? What kind of farmer are you? Normally, they say a grass farmer.
Really?
Because your grass is one of your most important. I mean, you got to take care of your grass.
Because that's what they eat. You know, up in Wisconsin, you know, it's funny, as you probably realize this, They take those fields and they cut them. They call it hay. It's grass. It's native grass. And then they bale it up and they put it in, like wrap it in cellophane or whatever they wrap it in, plastic, so that in the wintertime they can feed their cattle.
Yeah, I do that.
You do that? Why would you do that when your grass goes year-round in Alabama? I don't get it.
It goes dormant.
It does?
Yeah.
Your grass in Alabama goes dormant?
Yeah, I have to feed hay, not at the length that they do in Wisconsin, but from usually mid-November to the end of March, I'm feeding hay.
Really? But that's what you call it, hay?
Yeah.
That you've cut and baled?
Yeah.
Do you got a baler?
My neighbor does.
You use his baler?
Yeah. I have a hay cutter. I have a rake. You need three things. You need a mower.
Yeah. You use your brush hog to mow it?
No, you need a hay mower.
Really? Just to cut grass?
A brush hog
just cuts it up too much.
It's just going to pulverize it. You need a nice clean. You need something that cuts it clean at the
base. How much do you let it grow before you cut it?
You let it get up to about knee high. And then there's different philosophies out there too. At what time do you cut it? Do you cut it when it's all green, or do you let it seed out and let the seeds fall onto the ground?
Right.
For next year.
Right.
And then cut it. My neighbor, who I've learned everything from, my neighbor's name is Tommy, and he's a cattle farmer and has been his entire life.
Is this the electrician dude?
Yeah. He's roughly 70 years old. So everything I know about raising cattle is from him. So his philosophy is you let the grass seed out.
And then,
And then you cut it. So, in fact, when I get back from next week, when I get back from visiting you, I'm going to be cutting hay, cutting my grass and making bales. But...
For November through what?
Yeah.
January or something like that? February?
Yeah, through March, probably.
Before it started. I can't believe I didn't know that the grass goes dormant. I thought...
Yeah, it gets brown. It was brown when you were there.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah. I didn't think about it. I just thought you were a bad grass farmer.
No, actually, I spend a lot of time on my grass.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Fertilizing... Right. Weed killing.
Yeah, and then now, but you're also selling. I mean, you're butchering some of your cattle now and selling it, right?
Yeah. So the heifer calves, the female calves, I'll keep them for 6 months till they're weaned off their mom.
Yeah.
And then I'll take them to auction. And right now, cattle prices are incredibly high. I mean, you could sell I hesitate to say what price, but let's just say a 300-pound calf, 400-pound calf will sell for, $1,500, $1,800 at an auction. When I got into this business, 3 years ago, that same calf would have brought $300 or $400.
Hmm.
There's
a shortage right now.
That's how steep beef prices are.
Right. Yeah.
Now the bulls I'll grow out. I'll put them on. I separate them, keep them separate, and grow them out to 1,000, 1,200 pounds, and then I'll butcher them. Hmm. And I sell. I usually sell a quarter steer. So I cut them up into fours. And I sell it. And to be honest with you, I never have had to advertise. I mean, I'm having one butchered the day after I get back from here. That steer has been sold for months now. People have bought enough the quarters.
How do they know about it? How do they find out about that? Right there locally?
Yeah.
He's going to get, somebody's going to consume it for chow for their family.
Yeah. People are, grass, I wouldn't say grass. You see in the grocery store, it says grass-fed beef, right? Well,
yeah.
Every cow is grass-fed. I mean, every single one, so it means nothing.
Right.
But the point is, people are turning more and more to local farmers.
Right.
For their beef, because it's not injected with byproducts,
right,
hormones, and all that other. You know where it's coming from. It's coming. Mm-hmm. Every calf, every bull I sell for meat has been born and raised on my ranch, and I can guarantee you there's never been a single shot put into one of those.
Mm-hmm. It's organic, right? And we can call it organic, right? Yeah,
I don't know all the rules of organic, but it's
sounds pretty organic to me. Interesting. Wow, that's great, man.
Maybe it's not organic because they use fertilizer on my grass, and that might throw it. They're eating fertilizer. I don't know. But the point being, this is that the beef sold from local farmers and myself is so much higher quality than what you get in a grocery store.
I'm sure that
it's not as, it doesn't look as pretty because they put dyes in that red meat in the grocery store.
To make it look appetizing.
Nice and red.
That's.
And they put it under special lighting so it makes it look even more red.
Hmm. Well, I'm impressed by what you've done in such a short period of time, Joel. It's really quite incredible. And, like you said, you're still working full time. You did 28 years in active duty, and then you got out and started. Went back to the Army and working as a contractor. And how long have you been doing that?
Well, I'm not a contractor.
I beg your pardon.
Department of the Army civilian.
Yeah, but people don't know what that means. That means you work for the Army as a civilian.
I work for
the Army. But you're a GS 14, which is the equivalent of a, colonel?
Lieutenant colonel.
Yeah, and the next level is GS-15, and then it goes SES after that, which is like a general officer equivalent.
Yeah. And I have.
You're not doing that. Yeah, I understand.
I don't have time.
Yeah.
I'm pretty comfortable right now.
Well, let's switch gears and talk about, this is a curveball for you. How about your favorite, oh man, I don't even want to say favorite John McDaniel story. That's no good. That's probably not. We probably don't want to go there. But favorite story that involved both a basic training or something else.
I'm sorry that you put me on the spot. No. Let me think.
I got one for you.
You started.
Okay.
I'm sure someone.
Okay. All right. I got.
There's always spinoffs.
Yeah. Of course. Yeah. So I've got one. This one happened when we were in basic training. We were both privates. You got selected squad leader right off the bat, and I did not. And I noted it. Trust me, I noted it. You know, you know, I was like, all right, you know, because squad leader, what was there, three squads?
I think four.
Four squad leaders, senior squad leader, Morgan.
Oh, yeah, Morgan.
So he didn't do anything besides be big and himself. But anyway, so there was three actual squad leaders and then the senior squad leader, Morgan. So that's how that worked. But I remember you got selected early, and I was like, okay, you know, I wonder when I'm going to get my head nod, you know? And so finally, eventually, he fired somebody else and then put me in as squad leader. I'm like, okay, now the world is right again. Joel and I are leading each leading a squad, right? As it should be, you know? And so I remember Sergeant Lyle one day pulled us, the two of us, maybe you'll remember, We just got out of the field. We were doing something, and he sat on the old steps of the cement steps of the World War II barracks, and I always had a rubber band. I have one in my hand right now. It's funny, but he always had a rubber band. And he was always twisting it between his fingers, you know, and so he had this rubber band in his hand, and he called us both. He goes, "Squid leader, come here, you two." He's called us squid leaders, not squad leaders. Squid leader, come here, squid leader. And he pulls us over, and he's sitting on the steps, and we're standing there at probably parade rest. And he puts us at ease. And then he says, "I want to tell you guys something right now. I've never had two squad leaders make it all the way through. Get out of here." And we left. That was all he wanted to tell us. He pulled me and you, not the senior squad leader, not the other squad leader, whoever that was, but just the two of us, frickin' frack. Called us over and told us that he'd never had two squad leaders make it all the way through basic training, and we did it.
Well, I'll tell you. Here's an example of that.
Yeah.
Of why that was.
Yeah.
Do you remember this? We were probably in the marksmanship phase, and we were probably just got done with a ruck march back from the range to the barracks.
Mm-hmm.
And for some, maybe not, maybe we came back early, but I think it was lunchtime. Anyway, the point being, everybody in the platoon, to include the drill sergeants, you know, you know what your boots look like after
you've been marching. They're covered in stuff.
They're just covered in dirt.
Dirt, yeah.
And we got back, and, you know, it was lunchtime, and, you know, everyone goes to lunch, and if I remember correctly, you had whatever 10-15
smoke
after lunch,
smoke break time, smoke something break like time, that.
Sit back on the bleachers and shoot the shit.
Right.
You and I went into the barracks, and we brushed shined our boots. You remember that?
I do.
And they were shiny. And then they called us to formation, and we're the only. Everyone in that formation had dusty boots. Except you and me had shiny boots on. I remember Sergeant Lyle so damn proud of us. He called. Do you remember he called?
That might be when he called us over.
He called the other drill sergeants over to look at those two.
I don't remember that, but that's cool. Do you remember that one senior drill sergeant, the guy that was the Vietnam?
Yeah.
He had a CIB. Scary. Scary. I don't remember, but he was scary looking. And I thought, let me tell you this story. I'll tell a story because I don't think I've ever told it before. Maybe, but I don't recall. Anyway, so we were standing in formation, and it was early in basic training, like week one or two. And we went there in the summer. So we're in South Carolina, Fort Jackson in the summer. It's August. It's July, August. It's brutal, right? And all of a sudden, Sergeant Lyle, "Tone, tange, huh?" And we snapped. And he goes, you know, in a big, big smoky, brown hair, the drilled DI hat. "Morning, sir." And he cocks his head a little bit and kicks out a really nice salute. And I was like, what just happened? And I'm looking out of the corner of my eye, not moving because we're still at attention, you know, and then he gives us at ease. And I turn around and I look, and here's this young snot-nosed cadet. It was a cadet. Wasn't even a lieutenant. He had a shiny little pip on his hat and on his lapel. And I just remember thinking to myself, Sergeant Lyle just called all of us to attention and saluted that dude that looks like a punk. You know, he did. He just looked like a little snot-nosed punk. And I just thought to myself, what's that all about? I honestly, I didn't even know the difference between an officer and enlisted. I had no clue, yeah. Right? So
you always did fail the flashcard.
Yeah, you know, I did. Yeah, I failed the flashcard test. Do you remember those bags we had to carry? Remember those bags? Squad leaders had to carry these little army green bags, yeah. That had all the training material in it for hip pocket training, flashcards and whatnot. Yeah. Anyway, remember they also had we had two canteens of squad leaders.
Salt
water. How about that? We used to, that was real good for you. The salt water, and you were to give, it was for your guys.
Yeah.
Is anybody passed out on you, which guys did all the time back then, you know, started to get woozy from heat stroke, you just give them salt water. That's a good idea. Let's give them some salt water. True story, right?
Yes.
Yeah, true.
I don't know if that's a recommended course of action.
I don't believe it is. You just pour salt in the canteen, add water. Some dude's passed out on the side of the road. Just pour it in his mouth. He'll be all right. That's just too funny, man. I swear. But I think, honest to God, because after we graduated basic training and went back, you know, to college, I joined the ROTC. That got me out of... I joined the ROTC as a junior. I didn't have to go to freshman, sophomore year ROTC, joined as a junior. And so now you're ahead of your peer group by quite a bit, because basic training was awesome to learn about the Army. And the cadets that go to ROTC, they have to learn, you know, I mean, they might go to basic camp or something, but they're not going to Fort Jackson, South Carolina, Tank Hill. Yeah, interesting. Well, Joel, I appreciate you very, very much, buddy. I always have admired you and your service to this nation. You went on and made the rank of colonel right below general. I mean, that's an amazing accomplishment. You've got a beautiful family, and you and I have been best of buds forever, and I do appreciate you, you know, sharing your story with us, and I want to wish you all the best of luck, you know, out there, you know, doing your thing with Rally Point Ranch, and you know, we're here for you. I got an amazing network of people that I'm sure have got their wheels turning already on how, you know, we can, you know, get behind you and help you if you choose to go down that road in earnest. We're, you know, I think it's a great idea you've got, and I appreciate your time today. I'll give you the last whack at the pinata there, buddy.
Well, I guess my last what I'm kind of excited to get into, and I appreciate you, you know, I don't think John said it, but certainly not the sole purpose of this trip down to see John was to talk about nonprofit, but that was the, you know, the driving thing, because I'm starting to get serious about it now.
Mm-hmm.
I come to see you anyway because it's fun to hang out, but yeah, I'm looking forward to, you know, getting involved in it, helping people transition. I mean, I do. You know, I've seen the great things that Wounded Warriors in Action has done, and you know, I guess I'd like to be part of it. And here's something for the people that listen to this. It's incredible the amount of things you and I have done the same in our lives.
Oh yeah.
I mean, when we were kids, what you did, I did, what I did, you did.
All of it. We wrestled, baseball, football, baseball.
Went to college, joined ROTC.
Well, went to basic training, then joined ROTC.
ROTC.
Became commissioned.
Yeah.
Went, served our country for in my case, 20 years, you for 28. And our big time sportsmen. We used to hunt, fish. I mean, we did it. We just did everything together, man. We each have two boys.
Yeah, we each have two boys. I'm always like a step behind you, and some people may look at that as, you know,
that's not true.
More of a risk taker or a leader, but it's not really like you went into ROTC probably a year before I did, and that's because
really
they're looking.
I don't
look at this. Look at this guy. You know, he ain't gonna beat me. So I went into ROTC, and then both in the Army, our careers, and you retired as a lieutenant colonel. I said, "Watch this."
Watch this. Yeah, I figured you were doing that.
And so then you started your Wounded Warriors of Action, and now I'm coming in behind. But back, some people may say, well, John's really kind of guiding me, but it's not. I let you go first, so I see if
it's so where I screw up and then make it better.
It's a mistake. I'll stay.
My perspective is different than your perspective on a lot of that,
and I'd also like to one last thing. I mean, yeah. I don't know the time limit.
There's no time limit. This is our show.
I don't remember what you said about John was talking about our fishing trip this morning. Some of what he said was true. We were out fishing, and we did hook on to a very large stingray. But I remember hooking them, and I remember
for real.
I remember handing John the pole just so he could see what it felt like to fish on.
Yep.
But the majority of the time, I was fighting, and John was sitting there watching.
Boy, okay.
that's how I remember.
History is best remembered by those who write or talk about it. But if that's the story you want to go with, we'll go with that, Joel. That'll work. That works for me. But you know, I would tell you, for the longest part, I'm just being honest. You know, that when we hooked into that thing and he made his first couple of runs, I had no idea what that was, and that was a giant. That was a giant stingray. It really was. It just because normally if it's a big stingray, you can get it up. You can get it up off the bottom of the ocean. And this one was just not doing that. And it was making runs for us. So I wasn't exactly sure. I thought maybe, like I said, it was one of those, you know, sawtooth sharks or something like that. A big skate. I don't know. Anyway, lots of fun.
Well, it was an experience. I mean, it's like, I have never,
we won.
I've never fought a fish.
Yeah. Yeah. And we returned him safely to the water. He had a little mark on him, but he was good to go. Well, he's got a story now too.
He does.
Yeah. Well,
from what I understand, you know, the female stingrays think that's pretty cool. You got a mark.
He's a wounded stingray. He's a veteran now. Awesome. Well, hey, listen, Joel, you're going to do great things. Honored to have you here. It was a great day today, and thanks for being on the program, buddy. We genuinely appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, John. Appreciate it. Right.
Thank you for listening to the WWIA podcast. To learn more about the Wounded Warriors in Action Foundation and how you can get involved, please visit our website at wwiaf.org or follow us on social media on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn. If you'd like to comment or offer feedback about our podcast, or if you have a suggestion for a future episode, please email us at podcast@wwiaf.org. Thank you for your support and for helping us honor, connect, and heal our combat wounded Purple Heart heroes through the power of the great outdoors.